four.
Organization.
Do you have a gardening problem? We can help you with that. A program dedicated to help you grow a better garden, maintain your landscape, grow healthier trees, make that grass look a little bit greener, as well as preserving what you grow. We're here to help you with your gardening problem. You're tuned in to Garden Talk Radio.
You're listening to the most informational packed hour of garden-focused radio in the country and on the internet with your host, husband and wife team, Joey and Holly Baird. This is the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show.
Welcome to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show. Thank you for being part of the program today. The Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show is presented to you by Power Planter Earth Augers, the official digging tool. To find the right size for your digging projects, visit powerplanter.com. Well, you've joined us for another great episode here, and we appreciate that. Whether you're listening to us on one of the 16 radio stations that are broadcasting our program here in 2020, through our radio app, through our website. That website is thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com under the Season 4 tab at the top of the page, or podcast replay or in-studio video replay. We thank you for being part of the show and being with us this week. I am your host, Joy Baird. Beside me is my wife, co-host, best friend, and gardening partner,
Holly Baird.
This program is for you, about you, to help your garden grow better, to maintain your landscape, make your trees look greener, and your grass to grow stronger. You can get a hold of us a couple of different ways. One being, you can send us an email at gardentalkradio@gmail.com. Very easy to remember, gardentalkradio@gmail.com. Or you can give us a call right now. If you can't get through, you can leave a message and we'll call you back. Or you can call us at any time. Our hotline is always open, and that number is easily to be remembered. 1-800-927-SHOW. 1-800-927-SHOW. What a day on the program. We're going to go over non-edible indoor plants in which you can start growing or get and grow right now, and they can be grown year-round indoors, as well as the second segment about leaves in your garden, the importance and the powerful ability that they have for your soil. And Susanna Shamrock will be with us, all about elderberries, author. We're going to learn a lot with her about elderberries, what they are, what you can use them for, how to grow them, the whole deal, as well as your garden questions. So let's get into the program about indoor, non-edible plants that can be grown year-round, Holly.
Yeah, so you want to, it's nice to have plants in your home for many reasons. Sometimes they purify the air, sometimes they just provide you some nice color, sometimes they also just offer, I don't know, whatever, something good. So one thing, you can kind of categorize different areas of your home. So if you're looking for like a plant to put in the family room or the den or more of a communal space, or like a TV room, one would definitely be the peace lily. And
well, I think we need to disclose here before we get into identifying these plants. One, you need to know that you are capable of having a plant indoors, meaning if you don't have, if you don't have to worry about small children getting a hold of it, tipping over, if it's going to be elevated high enough, if you've got animals, pets that may use it as a litter box or just as a curiosity device and knock it off shelves and stuff like that.
Right, for sure. And some plants are, do have a chance to be poisonous.
Correct.
So that's something to keep in mind as well. If you have a curious pet or child that might eat the plant, it might not be good. So that's definitely a good point. And also, you have to consider lighting conditions. A lot of these houseplants either like a lot of light or don't like a lot of light. It's not, I mean, sometimes it is in between, but that's something to keep in mind as well. All so right. The peace lily.
Peace lily, yes.
It's good for different lighting situations. It's very low maintenance and it has a nice little smooth green leaves. And it's a pretty well-contained plant. It doesn't get out of control or anything.
Now, with these plants, you kind of need to know a little bit about the environment, like you talked about, but also the temperature. Are you in Southern California? Is it going to be air-conditioned a lot of portion of the year? Are you in Minneapolis, Minnesota, where you're going to have, you know, the air conditioner on for part of the year and then the heat on, and what type of heat? Because these plants all are affected very differently by those climatic differences. So we want to keep aware of that. Now, where can we, we'll name these off. Where is a good place to find these types of plants if they want to purchase it? We're not necessarily starting these from seed. We're getting these already established and bringing them into our home.
Well, there's a lot of options for you. A lot of big box stores do have a houseplant area. Also, you can call your local garden center, and sometimes they have houseplants.
And they've got it like a year-round greenhouse that they've keep them humidified.
Yeah.
And warm all year.
Yeah. And then also there's smaller garden centers that grow that will have, if you ask around sometimes, if you call a garden center and they say, no, we don't have them, but maybe a different garden center does, a lot of times they'll give you the information. There's different groups on Facebook, social media, where you can find plant groups, things like that.
All right. What's the next one on our list?
It's called the Golden Pothos, and what this is...
It's P-O-T-H-O-S.
Yeah, and it's really good for clearing pollutants out of the air. In fact, even NASA has done research that it is good for clearing the impurities out of the air.
Okay. Bamboo palm.
Yep, so this is another one that NASA likes, and it purifies the air. It does need to be more carefully watered. And it just makes a nice living room plant.
Well, now, bamboo, there's two types of bamboo that you can grow outdoors. There's a controlled type of bamboo, and then there's a very invasive bamboo that even the strongest weed-killing company in the world has said, good luck with that. It's very, very invasive. So if you're going to plant bamboo outside, you want to do it in a very large container and not in the ground if you are at all concerned that it's going to spread under with runners, because you may plant it by the mailbox, but by dinner time, some of these bamboos will run underneath the house and in the backyard because they're so invasive. Not, I'm being exaggerating, but it doesn't take much time. So we want to be cautious.
It's a bamboo plant.
It's a bamboo plant. Yeah. But so I just want to put that warning out because people, bamboo's pretty. Let's plant it. Don't do that. Put it in a container. But bamboo palm can be grown inside. And also, let's see here, what else we got? French lavender.
Yeah, so these are stuff that is good for maybe where you sleep. One would be because it's helpful and relaxing. It's a relaxing plant, more or less. And then also because it does remove toxins from the air. So French lavender, and people find lavender to be a calming scent. So that is a plant that you could have near where you sleep to be calming.
Now, when we say clean the impurities out of the air, we're talking the air you breathe out, maybe some dust or that type of thing. We're not talking about that you go through a pack of cigarettes a day and it's going to purify the air in your house. It doesn't do that.
No. So this is like just common, you know, whatever is floating around.
Right.
Here.
Just to be clear that these plants aren't miracle workers.
Right.
Another one here is
the snake plant, and everybody has seen this plant. It looks like kind of like little leaves shooting up out of the pot, like kind of more pointy looking leaves. I don't really know how to describe it.
Because it's not mother-in-law's tongue.
No. Maybe. I don't know. I just know it's known as a snake plant.
Okay.
So it's good for a corner if you want to put a plant in a corner because it kind of stays more contained as well.
Vertical and it doesn't spread out
right.
Like some of these will.
And so, you know, if you're thinking about you've been spending a lot of time at home and you're like, I want to redecorate or I want to spruce something up, think about getting a plant. Think about perhaps getting some sort of hanger for that plant or just rearranging around a plant, and sometimes that can be a nice focal point.
And you do have to feed these plants. Each of these type of plants require a different fertilization regimen and moisture. Some of these plants like a lot of moisture in the soil. Other ones do not like as much. Some of them like that wet time and then that dry time. And also it all depends on how dry the air is in your home as well, how frequently you need to water, in addition to how much soil is in the pot, because the less amount of soil you have, the quicker it's going to dry out. So these all are factors, because we see this happen in the springtime in the outdoor world of gardening, where you go to the garden center and you see these people buying these hanging baskets and they're beautiful, and then they forget to water them, and then they are on the side of the road because they just chucked the whole thing out there and said, well, it died and I'm a terrible gardener. Right. You got to water it.
Right. And that's another thing is actually a lot of times if you go on to different like websites like the Facebook Marketplace or Craigslist, people are getting rid of houseplants for whatever reason. Maybe it was too much of a commitment for them. Maybe they got a pet that decided that it wanted to be best friends with the plant, whatever, small children, who knows. But sometimes you can find really nice developed plants in nice potted containers for a pretty good price.
All right. We've got what else we have here?
We got the it's called a Dracaenia, I think is how you pronounce it. And this is when you have a lot of space to fill. So say you
corner
have
of a three-season room of some sort. Yeah,
yeah. Something like that. But it is, the leaves can be toxic, so that's something to keep in mind.
We got a fern. We got ferns. Ferns are easy to grow.
So ferns do good in bathrooms because they like a little bit of humidity. So if it's...
And they seem to be able to tolerate that low light as well.
And then another one, this is a really good option if you don't have a lot of light, is a cast iron plant. It's very hardy, and if you forget to water it or something, it's okay. And
if you forget to water it for 2 weeks, it's okay. If you forget to water it for 7 years, no.
No, but like it bounces back from not watering for a little bit, and it doesn't need a lot of light.
Orchids is something that you enjoy.
Yeah, I don't know why I don't have an orchid yet.
It's, yeah. But these are tropical plants, and there is a very unique and way to water them. They actually will grow in the roots or the armpit of the tree where it will get some water, and then it will dry out. These roots are not necessarily in soil, so it's one of those you water it, and then you pour the water off. And that's how the orchid grows, and it blooms a couple of times a year. I think we've never had one, but there are multiple.
No, we have not.
Yeah, there's multiple different varieties in which you can get. There's a little maintenance to it, but that's the same with all of these plants when it comes to that. Now, in the studio here, Holly went to a local independent garden center, I guess it was, and bought this humongous plant. I have no idea what it is.
It's a monstera.
It's a monstera, okay. Uh-huh. And the purpose of this humongous plant is?
It will help purify the air.
Okay.
And it's pretty, and it's nice, and I like it.
And then the other one's sitting in
I got a Calathea, and actually one of my coworkers gave it to me. She bought it for me for my birthday like a few years ago, and it was at my office, but now I work from home.
Right. And so we thought it was dead.
Yeah, but...
Because you hadn't been in the office for 6 months.
No, it was like 3 months. Well,
it seems like 7 years. But anyway...
Right. Yeah. But luckily, our maintenance guy, he watered the plants in the office. So it was actually probably overwatered. But that's okay. So, now it's here. We repotted it into this fun little planter. And that's where we're at.
English ivy is a very easy plant to grow indoors. Peppermint is another one. Anything with mint in it, you want to grow it in a container. A lemon balm is also another easy one to grow.
Now, the English ivy, the peppermint, and the lemon balm are good for, like, the home office.
Uh-huh.
So they can – lemon balm is nice. Peppermint peppermint's supposed to help your memory.
What?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. That's your hearing.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Who are you?
Sometimes I wish I could forget about you, too, Joe.
All right. Mm-hmm. People are yelling at the radio going, see, they're the same as us.
Yeah. So, excuse me. So English ivy. Now, another thing is to keep in mind is that some of these plants might vine and grow and whatever. So, I know one of my coworkers had an ivy and she would have to cut it back at some point. Otherwise, it was just like climbing across the cube walls. So, yeah.
So there's just a list of several of, and there's hundreds of different types of house plants in which you can grow on the non-edible side of the realm, and it's nothing wrong with a non-edible plant. It does a lot of benefits as well as add something to look at in the cold, cold months that soon will be upon us.
Thank you for taking the time out of your day to listen to our show. This is our 30th show of 2020. Did you miss last week's show? We talked about preparing your yard for winter and saving seeds, and our guest was Katie Kuznasek. She is the Booch Witch. She's a kombucha expert. You can listen to that show by going to your favorite podcast platform and searching the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Podcast, or we'll make it even easier. You can go to send us an email at gardentalkradio@gmail.com, put in the subject line show 30, and we will send you the link.
And just so people are aware, we only do 35 shows a year. At the end of October, our season will be completed, and we will return back in March because we need a break, and things kind of really slow down in that realm.
We'll be right back. Do not go anywhere. We'll be talking about using leaves in your garden. You're listening to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show, a show about helping to help grow a better garden, maintain your landscape, help your trees grow better, make that grass look greener, and preserving what you grow for indoor and out.
Got a question for Joey and Holly? Send it via email anytime to gardentalkradio@gmail.com.
Do your trees look sad? When we here at the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardens have a tree or shrub issue, Dr. Jim's is the product we reach for, as it is the product that works. It really provides results. Their small batch, extra potent blend of readily available nutrients is exactly what your trees, plants, and bushes need to regain their health and stay bug free. It's super easy to use, it feeds the microbes, and adds new life to your soil, so you can grow stronger plants, chemical-free, environmentally responsible fertilizer that works. It will put a smile on your face and your plants. To find out more about Tree Secret and other products, visit drjims.com. That's drjims.com.
Trim Bin turns any chair into a workstation. Comfortably sort your herbs, dried flowers, cannabis, and more. Easily collect pollen with a static brush and mirror finish collection tray. High walls keep your work contained. To get yours, visit harvest-more.com. Made in California.
Do not go anywhere. There is more of the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show to come, which is presented to you by Power Planter Earth Augers, the official digging tool. To find the right size for your digging project, visit powerplanter.com.
The number one key to healthy, productive plants are the roots. Starting from seed to full-grown plants, RootMaker.com has the answer. From seed starting trays with an innovative design that air prunes the roots, creating a fabulous root system, never again will you have root-bound plants. To multiple gallon grow bag sizes to raised beds, RootMaker.com has your grow needs covered. Visit RootMaker.com. Use coupon code TWVG at checkout and get 10% off your entire order. Brought to you by Blue Ribbon Organics, providing locally made organic compost and soil blends for gardens, farms, landscaping, and more. Visit BlueRibbonOrganics.com or call 262-497-8539 to find their products nearest you.
Blue Mel's Garden and Landscape Center offers an awesome selection of high-quality garden and landscape products. We have just the plants you're looking for, annuals, perennials, veggies, herbs, and more. Plus, you can always count on us to answer all of your questions and offer expert advice. Blue Mel's also carries the largest selection of bulk landscape materials in the area. Enjoy a beverage from our coffee shop while your kids run around in our huge playground. Join our growing list of highly satisfied customers. Visit the garden center that offers everything you're looking for. Visit Blue Mel's today.
Blue Mel's, 4930 West Loomis Road, 414-282-4220. The Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show is brought to you by the following: Neptune Harvest, Happy Leaf LED, Drip Works, We Grow Indoors, Deer Defeat, Harvest More, Blue Ribbon Organics, Blue Mel's Landscape and Garden Center, Chip Drop. Find all sponsors at thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com and thank them for their support.
Now back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show, which is presented to you by Power Planter Earth Augers, the official digging tool. To find the right size for your digging project, visit powerplanter.com. Now here are your hosts, Joey and Holly Baird.
Welcome back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show. Making it our way through another episode.
Well, Joey.
Yes.
I know that you like being thrifty.
Uh-huh.
And I like being thrifty.
Right.
So what's the thriftiest thing that's going to happen right now, or soon, very soon, within the next month, that you can add to your garden?
It's going to be the leaves that fall from the trees. The trees pick up a lot of the minerals and nutrients in the soil, put them in the leaves, and then at the time of fall, they fall, and you can incorporate them into your yard and your garden. There are a couple of ways in which we can do it. There are some tree leaves that you don't want to include into your garden. However, there are some ways in which we want to do this and some ways that we have done it in the past that has worked very, very well for us. First off, if you are wanting to maintain a beautiful lawn and you don't want to rake the leaves up and you're not going to put them on your edible garden beds, simply mulch them with your lawnmower. It breaks them up, it falls between the grass, and it will break down and feed the soil. Easy way. You don't need to rake them up and take them to the curb and let somebody else deal with them. Just let them break down in your yard, and they'll work just fine.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely a good option. So there's a few different things you can do with the leaves. You can insulate if you have any sort of tender plants. And a lot of times people will do this with not just edibles, but with like roses, other possible, we got a question about, what was that tree? Oh, okay. Anyway, so you can do this with other.
Well, if you do this around a plant, such as a rose bush or a tree, you'd want to create a cage around it, like with a chicken wire or square, tightly squared fencing of some sort to keep the leaves contained next to the plant to add, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's exactly what I'm saying is it helps. You could put it on the base of the plant. Same thing with, carrots. And we talked about carrots and how a few weeks ago about how carrots, you can leave them in the ground until you're ready to harvest and you would put leaves over them. And then kale, leeks, and beets are all good options for that.
And when we talk about covering them, we're not talking about a few inches. We're talking several feet of a mountain of leaves to keep the soil frigid, but not frozen, and keep the, vegetables alive but not growing.
Right. And then you can use these to boost your compost pile. Maybe you've covered all your garden, all your soil, and you have extra, you can add them to your compost pile.
And there's nothing wrong with taking a corner out of the garden or the yard and just piling them up, because leaves are very important in the spring. You can use them as a mulch. You can use them as soil amending. There's a lot of different things in which you can use leaves for. Instead of putting them on the curb or taking the time and mulching them and taking them to the curb for somebody else to pick up, utilize them on your property. Now, some of you may have very large properties which you're able to access leaves many portions of the year because you're in a wooded area, or you've backed the mulcher up and you just continue to unload loads of mulched leaves year after year, and you've got decades built up there, and it's a phenomenal free resource that you can use to feed your soil.
Right. Yep. And definitely is a free resource. Now, one thing you can also do, and we don't really talk about this, but you can make leaf mold. So what you would do is, if you don't, you can shred them to do this, but you don't have to. And you just rake the leaves into a big pile. And what will happen is they'll make this, after 1 to 3 years, the fungus will break them down, and then it's, turned into a leaf mold. So you have to choose a designated spot to put them, but after a few years, they would break down 1 to 3 years.
Well, the smaller the particles of the leaf, the quicker it breaks down, just like the compost. The smaller the particles in the compost pile is, the quicker the microbial life can break it down. However, in our past, whenever we had the in-ground garden, we had about 1,800 square feet, and we would scrounge and scavenge the leaves, not only on the property, but across the street and about a block each side of the house and on the front, on both sides. And a couple of, what it was, 2016 or 17, we brought in 72 44-gallon trash can fulls, and figured out to be a little over a ton of leaves. And then the next year we brought in fewer leaves because time of the restriction. But we didn't mulch these.
Right.
We would mulch some of them, but the majority of them, we just got them off the street, got them out of the yard, and dumped them over the grow beds. And at the time, which this would have been October, early November, we would mound them up 2.5, 3 foot tall on some grow beds. This can be the same, and we will do this on our raised beds that we created this year. But by the time spring comes along, that 2.5 or 3, let's just 3 foot to make it easy math, has reduced by about 80%. It's about 10 inches high. And then you just move the leaves back if you're planting starts, and then you can bring those, that mulch back around the start plants if you're doing kale or broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, whatever. But if you're doing like direct sowing, you can remove and pull it back, let those plants grow, And then if it is a plant in which you can tuck the leaves back around, you can, or you can utilize those leaves somewhere else. Now, some people will put them on their lawn or put them on their garden in full size or shredded, and then they will till them in. We're not a big advocate of tillage. However, if that is what works for you and has worked for you for many, many years, so be it. Go for it. Keep going with it. But we just lay the leaves on. And when we do what I just described, we laid those leaves on and piled them 3 foot high, and they broke down. And by springtime, they were about 10-inch high mound. By June, if you walked in our garden, you couldn't tell that we had brought a single leaf in that fall because they've all broke down. The microbial life, the worms, all of that stuff has fed this, has broke them down. When those leaves are mounded up, we can break the leaves back and we can see the worms scurry because they're all up on top of the soil feeding off of those leaves and taking them down and doing their thing under the soil. So it's a very beneficial, free, resource that we can utilize each year. And it seems like a daunting task, but if we can just get them mounded in the garden, put them somewhere, and then we can do a little bit at a time, with our situation in the city, is we're fighting the municipality that comes across every X amount of days and sweeps up all the leaves that all the neighbors have put on the street curb or in the gutter to get away. So we have to scurry in there and pull all those back out. We've never had an issue, at all. The neighbors don't. I mean, maybe they think we're crazy and they just leave us alone. I'm not sure.
I don't think they really care. They might not even notice.
No. Yeah. And you know, the neighbor directly left of us, when you're standing in the backyard, we rake a lot of the leaves out of his front yard because they're big, thick oak leaves.
Yeah.
And I don't think people are too upset when somebody else is doing some of the work for them.
Right.
So that's how we utilize our leaves. And a lot of great benefits to the leaves. Some people will bag them and put them in the corner of a shed or a garage or in the back, and then they'll take those bags and utilize them in the springtime and reduce the amount of moundage. They just pack them in a bag, a paper bag.
Right. So anyway, back to leaf mold.
Yes.
Leaf mold actually does have a purpose. So once it breaks down, say if you let that if you let that break down.
No. First of all, we're putting it like in a trash bag, right? And we're sealing it up.
No, you just make a pile.
Or just make. We can do it out in the open.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it takes a year or so to break down, and then after it makes that leaf mold, it's high in calcium and magnesium, and it retains 3 to 5 times its weight in water. So it's almost like a peat moss. That peat moss that has that weight, it's like that. Like the sponginess.
Right.
Yeah. So.
And when you pull that pile apart and you see those white little stringy things, that is the fungi. That's the good bacteria. That's what you want to see.
Right. Yeah. And that's what's all beneficial.
Yes.
Yes. So that's an idea if you're like, okay, you know, I have a bunch of leaves. I only have so much garden. I only have so big of a compost space.
I only have so much time.
You can let, you know, time's going to pass anyway. So you can let yourself make some leaf mold.
So if we don't have a leaf mulcher or a device in order, like a commercial device that's designed to suck the leaves up and mulch them, you can use a lawnmower with a bagger. It does work. You do lose a certain percentile of those the leaves, but it works very, very well. And then the benefit to doing that, like if you're going across the front yard, you're sucking the leaves up and they're going in the bag, you're going to get a little grass in there too. So it kind of has a little ratio of greens to browns and kind of helps the breakdown process a little bit, even though you're mounding it over the grow bed. So not a bad thing. It's totally okay to do that. Though the lawnmower is not quote unquote designed to do that, it works quite well.
So one thing to keep in mind is that there's some different leaves that could inhibit growth, and that includes walnuts, eucalyptus, and camphor laurel. And you don't want to put these, so you would want to compost them first, and then you could put them in your garden.
Okay, so we want to be aware of that.
And another thing is that if you are using something like oak leaves, you would want to. Oak leaves are very thick and almost kind of like waterproofish. So if you only have oak leaves, you
giant
would want
to, pieces of paper is what they're
right. Yeah. If you only have oak leaves, you might want to shred them, but also take some sort of other organic matter and kind of mix it in before you put them on your garden, because they otherwise they create like a almost like a barrier, like mm-hmm. a water barrier.
Inhibits the water from penetrating because of the density and the size in which they are. So some things to know about leaves that you may not have known, and maybe you are a new gardener and you're listening to this type of programming for the first time because you've never done it before. Leaves are a great resource. If you go to our website, don't let the name fool you. It's the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com, and in the search bar on the upper right-hand side, just put in fall leaves, and you're going to get a buku bunch of videos that will instruct you and show you how we do it. Or you can go to our YouTube channel, The Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener, and we've got 1,700 videos there, and a bunch of them are about leaves and the importance of leaves and how to utilize leaves in your garden for the best results next year. Gardeners are always planning ahead, just like farmers. You got to plan several steps ahead or several seasons ahead in order to reap the rewards in which you hope to seek. And that's what we do with the leaves. Well, summer is over. Let's just call it what it is. In many parts of the country, summer has shut down.
I mean,
down.
It's officially over.
It's officially over, yeah. Summer had to end sometime, and it chose to do it now, just like it does every year. And the kids are virtually learning. Some may have gone back to school. Your yard is sad because you have forgotten about it.
All right. Just because it is fall, we don't want to forget about our yards.
No, we don't. It's done some great things for you.
Right. Exactly.
It loves you.
It loves you. And especially this year, I'm sure you spent a lot of time there. They may be the Japanese beetles, though, they haven't forgotten about it either. They may be gone, but they're not far. They feasted on your roses, your berries. They laid eggs in your turf so that they can start again next year. But you can take a stand with Phylum's GrubGon. GrubGon is a non-chemical BT granular that specifically targets scarab pests and their larvae. You simply add the granular with a spreader, irrigate into the soil, and let the naturally occurring bacteria do its job.
Not only is GrubGon easy to use, but here you go, listen up. It is the only non-chemical choice that effectively controls grubs. And the best part about the whole deal, it's non-toxic to bees and other pollinators and beneficial insects. In fact, GrubGon has no label restrictions for use around flowering plants, so you don't have to get on your knees and remove those dandelions before use. Before you use this product, GrubGon from PhylumBioproducts.com, the natural choice. To find more out about Phylum Bioproducts and the other products they have available, go to their website, PhylumBioproducts.com. That's PhylumBioproducts.com, bioproducts.com. Hang around. You don't want to miss this. Susanna Shamrock will be with us. She is going to talk all about elderberries, everything. You're listening to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show. This program helps your garden grow better.
The Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener's phone lines are always jammed during the show. So Joey and Holly keep their phone lines open 24/7 to help you. Call anytime 24/7. Just dial 1-800-927-7469. Or just remember 1-800-927-SHOW. SHOW. Leave a message and they will call you back.
Planting conditions are always favorable with the Power Planter Earth Auger. No matter what the job is, Power Planter has the right size for you. Simply attach to a drill and let the Power Planter do the work for you, creating holes fast and efficiently with ease. Find the size that fits your project at powerplanter.com. Did you know fall is the best time to plant grass? It's true. With Pearl's premium ultra-low maintenance grass seed, it needs mowing only once every 4 to 6 weeks rather than weekly. Pearl's premium grass grows 4 foot deep roots, so it needs 75% less water and outcompetes other grasses and most weeds without chemicals and stays green year round. Buy Pearl's premium grass at Whole Food Markets in New England, quality garden centers, or buy online at pearlspremium.com. That's pearlspremium.com. And put in the discount code my name, Joey20. That's Joey20. 20 for 20% off discount today and tomorrow only. PearlsPremium.com, the best grass seed you'll ever grow.
Do not go anywhere. There is more of the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show to come, which is presented to you by Power Planter Earth Augers, the official digging tool. To find the right size for your digging project, visit PowerPlanter.com.
Pomona's Universal Pectin is a high-quality pectin that gels reliably with low amounts of any sweetener. If you're trying to reduce the amount of sugar in your diet, you'll love Pomona's Universal Pectin. Now you can make healthy homemade jams and jellies sweetened to your taste. You can use sugar or honey to sweeten. Bomono's universal pectin keeps indefinitely when stored in an airtight container. Easy to use, versatile, and comes with directions and recipes in every box. Find out more and where to buy at PomonaPectin.com. Also available at natural food stores and online.
The Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show is brought to you by the following. Phylum Bioproducts, Dr. Jim's, MI Greenhouse LLC, Green Gobbler, Water Hoop, Seed Savers Exchange. Find all sponsors at theWisconsinVegetableGardener.com and thank them for their support. Bluemel's Landscape and Garden Center. You've heard their name. Have you been to their facility? They have the largest variety of bulk materials available in the area. 40 items to choose from compost to wood chips to gravel to sand and everything in between. You can finish up those last-minute projects I know you want to get done so you're not thinking about them all winter long or having somebody tell you you should have got them done. Let Bluemel's Landscape and Garden Center help you achieve that goal and maybe get some brownie points with the family. Bluemel's Landscape and Garden Center at 4930 West Loomis Road, just off of Layton and Greenfield. You can give them a call at 414-282-4220 or visit them online at bluemels.com.
Now back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show, which is presented to you by Power Planter Earth Augers, the official digging tool. To find the right size for your digging project, visit powerplanter.com. Now here are your hosts, Joey and Holly Baird.
Welcome back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show. Holly, let's go to the hotline and bring in our guest for this week.
Yeah, Susanna Shmirak is a freelance health and environmental author and author of Everything Elderberry, How to Forage, Cultivate, and Cook with Amazing Natural Remedy, which was recently released on her website, healthygreensavvy.com. She has a lot of great info for affordable, green, and healthy living. Welcome to the program, Susanna.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, we are excited to have you because we've heard, your book is Everything Elderberry, and it's all about elderberry. Why is these little berries so good for people? Everybody, we see this on Facebook. We see this on social media. Oh, elderberry this, elderberry that. What's so wonderful about this?
Okay, well, there are a couple reasons. The first is that they are an especially rich source of antioxidants. That have made so many dark berries a focus of medical inquiry lately. They have positive impacts on long-term health, like protecting your brain, your circulatory system, lowering your risk of cancer. But the primary reason everyone's talking about them is the numerous studies that continue to come out suggesting their different ways of fighting viruses. They have extremely strong antiviral properties. In human trials, they've reduced the duration and severity of cold and flu. They seem in test tube experiments to interfere with the ability of a virus to penetrate cells and to replicate. And in addition, they help stimulate our immune system. So they're working in multiple different ways to promote health. So they're pretty astonishingly good at what they do.
Now, for people who have heard the term or elderberry, is this something that is naturally coming up in the wild? Is this something you cultivate in your garden? And is it easily identifiable, or do you really have to be careful if you think it is or you think it's not?
That's a great question. So the berries growing in this country are native wild elderberries, called Cyvucus canadensis. They're different than the ones that you generally buy online, which are from Europe, that variety of Cyvucus nigra. The ones that people are growing in their gardens are basically wild plants that someone has propagated. So they're plants that somebody's found that are producing really well or have extra flavorful fruit, and you'll find those as named cultivars at different nurseries. You'll find them growing all over North America and South America, for that matter, though they're slightly different subspecies. They're quite identifiable, but there are lookalikes. If you're a novice forager, you don't want to just go picking something because it has a purple berry. There are other purple berries out there that are not so good for you. I actually have a post dedicated to this on my site that goes over the different lookalikes you want to watch out for. So if you're an experienced forager and you can use all the identifying features, you're looking at the leaves, the bark, the growth habit, as well as the berries and the flowers, then they're not too difficult to identify. But I've been out with people who don't forage at all, and they say, there's a purple berry. Can I eat it? I'm like, no, you can't. We don't know what that is. So yes and no. It is dangerous to eat things you can't identify. It's also important to know what you're doing with elderberries. The unripe berries can give people stomach aches. You don't want to eat the leaves and stems, which have high concentrations of compounds that can also make you quite ill.
Wow. Well, so most people know about elderberry syrup. I'm sure they've seen, like, I've seen it at random places being sold. Yeah, so most people are aware of it. Aside from elderberry syrup, what are some edibles that you have listed in your book, perhaps, that you could use that are beneficial?
Absolutely. Well, there are so many different options besides elderberry syrup. That's the most readily available form. However, medicinally, you have lots of different options how you use the elderberries. If you have ever made a tincture, you know, alcohol extracts certain compounds. You can also steep them in vinegar or glycerin. You're going to extract different compounds. If you make a strong tea with it, that's another way to use it. And then they're just a really delicious add-in to things like fruit desserts or cocktails. I made a lot of frozen treats like popsicle and sorbet. There's ice cream, soda. Elderberry wine is kind of dual purpose. It was a very old-timey way to enjoy elderberries and also get medicinal benefits from it. People used it pretty commonly to treat colds and also arthritis. And we haven't even mentioned the flowers, which come about 6 weeks before the berries. And it was something that I didn't realize getting started on this project, how incredibly useful medicinally and incredible tasting they are. You can make a syrup from the flowers as well. That is a really popular add-in for confections of various sorts, like cakes, and also wonderful in all kinds of drinks, both alcoholic and non.
Now, with elderberries, are these a perennial? Are these an annual? How is the growth pattern on these particular plants?
It's a perennial. It's a perennial shrub, the kind that grows here. In the western United States, there's a different subspecies, Cerulea, that has a more tree-like form. The elderberry in Europe also has a more tree-like form, but they're definitely perennial plants. They're reasonably long-lived. They're tough. They do well in poor soils. They're great, great garden plants for places you can't grow much else.
That's very interesting. Now, aside from ingesting the elderberry, what are some other ways they are helpful to our bodies?
Well, one of the things I learned in doing the historical research is that from time immemorial, it seems, people have been using all kinds of parts of the plant. So the root, the bark, the leaves have all been used medicinally as well. The ways that people tend to use them now are externally. So elderflowers are wonderful for skin, especially for healing and for treating older skin. There's an elderflower farmer I spoke to in Oklahoma who makes elderflower soaps and salves, and he's got, as he describes, these hardworking farmer's hands. And after they started their elderflower business and he had to be processing elderflower so often, he said his hands started to look, he said, like those of a ninth-floor banker. Because his skin had been so wonderfully soothed by handling these things. They're also antimicrobial. They've been studied for their ability to interfere with pathogens. So they were often used in ointments and eye washes in the days before chemical pharmaceuticals. The leaves were also used in salves for sprains, bruises, and wounds. And army doctors in the Civil War used both the leaves and the flowers to treat the wounded.
Very interesting.
Well, just so everybody knows, we're talking with Susanna Shmarek, and she is the author of Everything Elderberry. So we noticed on your website you listed some other beneficial immune-boosting foods, ones that we might even be growing or anybody is growing or recently harvested. What are some common immune-boosting plant-based?
And what does that mean to people who are not familiar with that term?
That's a great question. So your immune system is a lot more complex than most people realize, and involves lots and lots of different processes that rely on many different nutrients. So we tend to think of vitamin C when we think about supporting our immune system, but it turns out our immune system also really wants all the B vitamins, vitamins A, D, E, magnesium, copper, zinc, selenium, all of these different things that in a, particularly in a standard American diet, it can be hard to get. You have to be kind of intentional about getting variety, particularly lots of fruits and vegetables, or as I found out in the case of vegetarians, making sure that you're getting some of those things that are much easier to get from animal products. So what you have harvested recently from your garden that would be wonderful to help your immune system with this transitional weather we're dealing with right now. Sunflower seeds are one of my go-tos to make sure I'm hitting some of the things that I might not get otherwise. Sweet potatoes and carrots are a great source of vitamin A, broccoli, red peppers, for vitamin C. Your gut health is incredibly important to getting your immune system functioning, and the prebiotics we get from our garden, like leeks and sunchokes, onions, broccoli stems, the microbes in our gut really like that. So that can be really helpful. Some of the other things that you might not get from your garden as much, but that are important, particularly in our northern climates, getting enough vitamin D, that's something where you may have to supplement. And if you're a vegetarian, B12 and iron turn out to be important too. So the immune system is pretty complicated, and the idea of supporting it so it can do its job is very helpful. I really like garlic for fighting off colds too, if you harvested that some this summer as well.
Absolutely. Now, you talk about purslane. Now, purslane, some people consider a weed, and other people have heard the term, but don't realize they're pulling it out of their garden because it's a nuisance. With that being said, you talk about that on the website. It grows in most people's gardens with abundance. What are some benefits that purslane can provide for the human body that obviously many of us may not be aware of because we just think it's a weed that's a nuisance?
Right. I love that you noticed that. Purslane in other parts of the world is a treasured vegetable, and it also turns out to be one of the best plant sources of omega-3 out there, and you can get vitamin C and E and beta-carotene and iron, magnesium, and potassium from it as well. It's pretty versatile as a salad vegetable or stir fries. I tend to throw it in smoothies, but it is, you know, abundant, and people just don't realize they have this extra crop going in their garden. It's one of my absolute favorite edible weeds.
Absolutely, yeah. So, obviously, your book is jam-packed with information. How can people find your book, and how can people find more information about you?
Okay, well, you can come visit my blog, which is healthygreensavvy, that's SAVVY.com, where I share all the super practical shortcuts to healthier, greener living that I can find. I have posts on foraging, gardening, remedies, healthy food, eco-conscious choices, as well as plenty of links to my book on the website. You can find it there. It's available on all the major retailers as well as through local bookshops.
Well, Susanna, we greatly appreciate the information which you provided for us. It just jam-packed full of knowledge that many of us may not be aware of exists in nature that the world provides for us without any effort.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I enjoyed speaking with you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for that. And when we come back, it's going to be about your garden questions, our garden answers. That's right. You can get a hold of us, and we will help you with your problem. You're listening to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show.
Got a question for Joey and Holly? Send it via email anytime to gardentalkradio@gmail.com.
Protect your plants against damage with a 3-in-1 plant guard and special blend fertilizer. Visit ivyorganics.com.
Wisconsin Greenhouse Company designs greenhouses specifically built for the northern Midwest climate. All of their greenhouses are made to withstand heavy snow and wind for years to come. They build freestanding and home-attached greenhouses for both commercial growers, schools, and backyard gardeners. Visit wisconsingreenhousecompany.com. For more information on pricing or to request a greenhouse catalog, go to wisconsingreenhousecompany.com.
Do not go anywhere. There is more of the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show to come, which is presented to you by Power Planter Earth Augers, the official digging tool. To find the right size for your digging project, visit powerplanter.com.
At Big Elk Garlic Farm, they are passionate about their garlic and take great care to provide you with the best seed stock around. Their high-quality garlic is non-GMO. They stand behind their product 100%. Get your garlic for this fall's planting at BigElkGarlicFarm.com.
When it comes to bulk landscaping materials, Blue Mel's Garden and Landscape Center is where everyone goes. Whatever the project, we have the materials you need with over 40 varieties to choose from. Soils, mulches, gravels, decorative stones, fresh cut sod. Blue Mel's has these products in stock and ready for easy pickup or fast delivery. So what are you waiting for? Now is the time to get your yard back into shape. Stop in and pick these materials up or call us for delivery today. Nobody does bulk landscaping materials better than Blue Mel's Garden and Landscape Center.
Blue Mel's, 4930 West Loomis Road, 414-282-4220.
The Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show is brought to you by the following: Power Planter Earth Augers, Ivy Organics, Root Maker, Pomona Universal Pectin, Chapin Manufacturing Incorporated, Pro Plugger, Tomato Snaps, World's Coolest Floating Rain Gauge. Find all sponsors at the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com and thank them for their support.
Now back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show, which is presented to you by Power Planter Earth Augers, the official digging tool. To find the right size for your digging project, visit powerplanter.com. Now here are your hosts, Joey and Holly Baird.
You got a question? Welcome back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show. We've got an answer for you. You want to get a hold of us? You can do that by giving us a call, 1-800-927-SHOW, or you can send us an email at gardentalkradio@gmail.com. Had a couple of questions come in this week through those avenues, as well as social media platforms. Holly, you want to, let's go down the list here.
Yep. So question came in, do I have to worry about herbicides on the straw I've purchased from different feed mills in my compost, or should I stop using straw much like purchased manure?
Well, Andrew asked that, and the answer is a simple yes and no, and I'll explain. Growing up on the farm in southern Illinois, we never sprayed our wheat, which creates the straw. You harvest the grain, and the stalk is the straw portion. You also can have straw via oat straw and barley straw and sugarcane straw and all that other stuff. We never sprayed the wheat ever, and there are some farmers in which spray in order to kill the grasses so they can get in there and harvest, and they don't have a lot of additional items in the grain. So you want to ask, you can ask the feed mill if they can find out if that grain or that straw has been sprayed. Now, if you're using it for a straw bale garden method type of garden, if it has a persistent herbicide, it's going to kill the broadleaf plants. It's not going to allow the plants to grow in it. Now, if you're using it as straw, as mulch, as compost material and all that, you would want to find out if the item has been sprayed, because that, you know, there is such thing as organic straw. It's very hard to come by in some portions of the country, and if you're able to get straw from the source, from the farmer, that's who you need to talk to. So yes and no on that. Not the best answer, but that's the right answer that we can offer. Okay. Margaret wants to know, can you overprocess your jars of jelly? I processed my jelly for 20 minutes because they were in pints. The recipe was for half pints and said water bath can for 10 minutes.
You technically can overprocess your jelly. Typically, I get that math in regards to doubling the time, but that's unfortunately not how it works. So in this case, a lot of times, I don't know what type of jam she was making or jelly, but a lot of times when you go up, you add 5 minutes. It just depends on what it is. That's not for everything you can.
Now, does the Ball Blue Book have that ratio, that breakdown in it?
It'll say pints, half pints, right. whatever.
What happens if you overprocess something like that? Something I know with like, pickles, it turns into like muck. You
right,
know?
Something like jelly jam, it's a lot of times just going to make it either too runny or it's going to make it very thick.
All right. And so, the difference between jam and jelly is?
Jam typically has like fruit chunks in it, and jelly is more like a
jam. It's smooth. Mm-hmm. Okay. Next question.
All right. Thank you for your podcast. I listen from Osceola, Iowa. I got my seed garlic from Big Elk Garlic Farm today. This will be my first time planting garlic. How should I store the seed garlic before I plant it? Also, this is our first year making our own compost. I have some that is mature, but not much. I want to use it for the garlic garden spot. Would it be better to use it on the top of the soil after I plant the garlic or work it into the ground now before I plant it? We have enough to cover that spot with about a half to 1 inch of compost. Okay. Thanks so much, Jenny.
Well, Jenny, we appreciate you ordering from Big Elk Garlic Farm, our official garlic seed provider in Pennsylvania. They still have garlic available, so you can go on over to BigElkGarlicFarm.com and get your garlic ready for this fall, because we'll be planting it in here in our area in about 2 weeks. And with the how to store the seed before you plant it, well, you're going to get it. It's going to come in the package. You want to get it out of the package, and you want to set it in a not a dark area, but a dry, cool, out of direct sunlight area, and just let it sit there. Don't worry about it. Now, 48 hours before you plant it, then you want to break the bulbs apart to get the largest cloves. Now, you can plant all the cloves. Based on the variety of garlic, you can have 4 cloves or you can have 14 or 16 cloves. It just depends on the variety. 48 hours before you put in the ground, you can go ahead and start breaking them apart and figure out what you want to plant, if you want to plant all of them or just the largest cloves. And then 24 hours before you put them in the ground, you can put them in a mason jar and soak them with a compost tea with just water, and leaving the skin on. You don't want to peel the skin off. You're not cooking it. So you want to leave that protective shell of the skin around each clove. And then you want to pre-soak it for about 24 hours, and that just helps hydrate the inner portions of the clove in order to help jumpstart it once it goes in the ground, and then you'll be fine. You want to put it about 2 to 4 inches based on if you're in a raised bed, 4 inches fine, regular garden, 2 to 3 inches, and you're off to the races, and you're good. Now, with the compost question, what I would suggest is, yes, you can use the unfinished compost in the garden if it's at least, 75% completed. I would go 50 to 75% completed. You can go ahead and use it. I would recommend working it into the garden, mixing in, because you're already going to work the soil for the garlic to be planted. So go ahead and work that already halfway or mostly broke down compost into the soil. And that gives a couple of benefits here. One is you can top dress it. That's great. That's fine. But if you get it under the soil, it's going to break down and finish that composting process much quicker. And it just works out a lot better that way. You can get the nutrients down around the roots. It doesn't have to work itself down. And the worms and the microbial life will be there, and it'll be just fine. There's nothing wrong with top dressing that partially finished or almost completed compost. We just find if you work it in the soil, it works a little bit better in the breakdown process, and everything's a little cleaner on that end.
Okay. So another question we had come in is how Danielle wants to know, how do you prevent the birds and squirrels from eating your freshly planted sunflower seeds?
Well, we've never had the issue of the extraction of the seeds from birds or squirrels after the planting has occurred. But there are some techniques in which you can exercise in order to get the best opportunity for those sunflower seeds to take off and germinate and grow. One is, if you have a persistent problem with squirrels digging these seeds up, you can plant your seeds. I'm going to take a reference here, a 4x4 square foot area. You can plant your seeds according to the recommended rate on the back of the package. And then you can cover that area with chicken wire or hardware cloth that's large diameter squares. And that way, with that metal, it's less likely for the squirrels to get in there and extract the seeds, and less likely for the birds to get in there and remove the seeds. That would be one way to do it. You could also take, and where you plant the seed, you can take a cone or a PVC clean PVC pipe that's like 2 or 3 inches in diameter and cut them to 6 inches in height and put that around, you know, a collar around where the seed is at. And that will help reduce the removal of the seeds from the squirrels and the birds. And then hopefully you can get it. Now, we've had problems with the squirrels after the fact. The plant is already growing, about to flower, and they hack it off halfway. We let that sunflower alone. We didn't remove it out of our garden bed. And we found, to our delight, that it created offshoots. And we had 5 or 6 smaller sunflowers that came off of that lower section of the stalk that was still growing out of the ground. Top portion had been mowed off, and we got rid of it. But it put off side shoots, just like you would if you harvested a broccoli or cauliflower head and left the plant alone. It creates side shoots and additional growth. So that was kind of a neat thing to see, and did it that way. Let's see here. Gail has a question. She's listening to us on WCRN 830 AM out of the Boston area. We appreciate her listening. And her question is, I just planted a crepe myrtle outside in somewhat of a protected area, and it is flowering and doing very well. I know it is not really for my zone, but decided to grow it anyway. I understand if I take care of it with mulch and a little TLC, it could possibly survive our winters. Your thoughts and your suggestions.
Yep. So she can definitely use some mulch around the base, just like we talked about using leaves, and then also wrapping it in burlap. So she's in, I believe it was zone 6A, and the crepe myrtle should do fine.
Yeah, it's suitable for zone 6. So,
and 7, yeah.
Yeah, and 7. So, but also we have to keep in mind, as we've talked about on this program, you know, out of the 30 shows, about 16 of them, just because it says your plant is suitable for zone 4, for example, it can get colder in your area than zone 4 paperwork shows on the internet. So,
right.
We want to be aware of that. So, based on the height and the size of the crepe myrtle, you can create a cage around it of 4 or 5 foot tall fencing and then pack it with leaves and keep it that way. Keep it chilled, but not frozen or too warm type of thing.
Right. Or you could wrap it in burlap.
You could wrap it in burlap, which would probably be the easier of the two, unless you have a lot of fencing around and you want to do that. So
maybe you do.
Maybe you do. Well, we greatly appreciate your time. We are out of our time, and we always thank you for taking time out of your day. We see the people listening all across the country via the podcast replay, the in-studio video replay, live on the radio right now, and we thank you for your participation. Even if you don't call or email us, we know you're listening. Our sponsors have informed us that their product are being sold because of you guys buying it, because you need their product, and we only go after companies that have good products that we know that you can use and is beneficial to your property and your lives. So join us next week on the program when we're going to be talking about growing indoor edible plants over the winter, what you need to know in order to get some production off of those plants so you can have some fresh produce in the winter, as well as pumpkins. What you need to know about pumpkins, what you didn't know about pumpkins, and what you can do with pumpkins besides hacking a face in the front of them and saving some seeds. We'll go over that too. And our guest will be Emma T. She is a community food sharing creator here in the Milwaukee area. And it's not a story that's just about Milwaukeeans. It's a story that can be translated and duplicated in every community across the country and the world, plus your garden questions. So until next week, for
Holly Baird,
I'm Joy Baird, and we will see you in the garden.